You are listening to Congregation Bethel of Manhattan, a two testament conservative style synagogue, serving Manhattan since 1993. Visit us on the web at bethelnyc.org.
Shabbat shalom, everybody. Despite my tremendous fear of public speaking, I'm really excited today about the message. I was excited before I got here, but I'm doubly excited because last night as I was going over my notes and felt like, no, I guess it was around 9, 10 o'clock at night, I felt like God said, this is the scripture, this is how I want you to end it. I was like, ooh, that's a good ending. And Billy and I hadn't had a chance to talk. I knew they were leading worship, and I thought to myself, how cool would it be if they sang Lev Tahor? Because it ties in perfectly. And they did. And I really feel like, Wendy, the prayer that you prayed at the end of that song was really this message. So that's pretty cool to me. And God is amazing. It's not the message I started out thinking I would give. When I saw that I was slotted to do the Parsha on Shalach, I was like, oh yeah, the story of the spies. The good report, the bad report, that's easy. It's going to be about talking positively versus talking negatively. And then I started digging into the Parsha devotionally. And God had a different message for me. And that's what I want to share with you. So the name of my devar is Being on the Receiving End. I had Lance read only those first two verses of the parasha because it really struck me the way the parasha starts out. God says, send out men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. It's present tense. Okay, thanks. And that stopped me right there because I thought, how exciting. It's been 400 years since God first gave the promise to Abraham that he was going to bring the people into this land, and now they're on the cusp. They're right there. They're ready to go in. And God says, I am bringing you in. What a privilege to be in that generation, right? Only as we'll see as we go on in the parsha, the people didn't see it that way at all. God was giving, but they weren't receiving. But before I get into all of that, let's do a little review of where we are in the story of Bamidbar. Bamidbar is the Hebrew word for in the wilderness. It's the Hebrew name for the book of Numbers. And as I was preparing, I read a commentary that basically said the book of Numbers, more than trying to be a really accurate chronological historic record of the time in the wilderness, it's more a story of the spiritual journey of the people. That's the focus in the wilderness. And so let's review that story. We know from last week's parasha that God had brought the people out of Egypt, and they're kind of in their in-between time now. Right? They've been delivered from Egypt, but they've not yet gone into the land. So they're nomads hanging out in the desert, and as we know from last week's parsha, they're literally not happy campers. They're focusing on everything they don't have. They are complaining. They're tired of the same sand vista, the same manna food, the same neighbors. You know, they had been arranged very specifically by God to encamp in a certain way. So they're next to the same people all the time. And they're tired of the sameness. They've had it. And we see them in the last parsha really complaining, whining. They sound like a bunch of bratty two-year-olds to me that don't get their way, frankly. And God has to discipline them. But this is what the time in the wilderness is about. It's about God having taken a people who were slaves, they were Pharaoh's people, and making them into his people and a people of promise. And so discipline goes with that, the school of hard knocks, learning actions and consequences. It's all a part of that. people didn't necessarily respond so well, but what's encouraging to me is that when we get to this parasha, God's still with them, and he's still planning to bring them into the land of promise. He's ready to do it. He's giving the land I am giving. Okay. So where do we pick up the story? This parasha, God says, I'm giving the land. The first thing is that they send spies out to do some reconnaissance. See, you know, what the land is like. What's its fruit like? What are the cities like? What are the people like? So they go out. The 12 spies, one from each tribe. They're gone for 40 days. They come back. And what happens next is they give a report of what they found. They bring with them the cluster of grapes that's so huge that they have to carry it on a pole on shoulders between two people, which is the Eshkol, which is our symbol for our shul, a land of bounty, a land of plenty. Now, you should know that this lines up with what God had already told them. It's interesting that God, when he first appeared to Moses and told Moses to go into Egypt, he told Moses the plan. And he said, I'm going to bring the people out. I'm going to bring them into their own land. And he tells them it's going to be a land of milk and honey. And he tells them people already dwell there. And the other part of the plan is that you're going to go in and dispossess these people because I'm taking the land from them and I'm giving it to you. So he told them who was there, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Canaanites, all these ites. And so they knew that. So when the spies come back, they basically confirm everything that everybody already knew. It's what God said it was. They couldn't resist, however, emphasizing just how strongly fortified the cities are and just how big the people were. Kind of sandwiched that in there, in between saying how great the produce was and, oh yeah, and these are the people that God said were there. Apparently this made the children of Israel really kind of nervous, because the next thing we read is it says that Caleb quiets the people, so they're getting antsy, and tells them, don't worry, we can go in and take it, at which point the other 10 spies, there were 12 spies, Caleb speaks up, 10 of the other spies say, no, we can't take it, people are too big. And this is where they start giving what the parasha itself characterizes as a bad report. Why is it bad? Because they start saying, let's see. Nope, not there yet. Okay, I can't remember what slides I made, sorry. because they start saying, exaggerating the challenges. People knew there were challenges, they knew they were going to have to go in and fight, they knew they were going to have to dispossess people, but they start saying, these people are so big that we were like grasshoppers in their sight, and this is a land that devours its people, and basically they're fear-mongering. They're fear-mongering, they're editorializing, and they're drawing a conclusion. They're saying, we can't take it. So the people freak out, right? So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. Doesn't it sound a little bit like the last parasha? They're crying and weeping. And the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Wait a minute, weren't they talking about returning to Egypt in the last parasha too? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. I guess so. I thought about this. I thought about them saying their go-to is return to Egypt. They said that in the last parasha. In this one, they say the reason is because they're afraid. They don't want to go up and die by the sword. But in the last parasha, they said it was because they didn't have meat in the wilderness and they missed leeks and onions, so they wanted to go back to Egypt, which, when you think about it, you would think what they would say instead, so why doesn't God hurry up and bring us into the promised land? Because we know it's the land of milk and honey. But no, they'd rather go back to Egypt. They'd rather return to what they know than face what they don't yet feel equipped for. Because when they go into the land, first they have to be conquerors, and then they have to be owners, and they have to take care of themselves in a way they've never had to do. They don't feel up to the task. So, at this point, Caleb and Joshua, there's mass hysteria. Caleb and Joshua try to reassure the people, and they say all kinds of really encouraging, spiritually uplifting things, how God is with them, good stuff. To which the people respond, okay, great, thanks for reminding us of those things. Thanks for reminding us that God's with us. We feel much better. You know, when you look at it that way, it's not what they said. What happened next is that all the congregation said, let's stone Joshua and Caleb for saying that, for trying to encourage us. Wow. At that point, I'm thinking, that's a good theme for a message, right? Misery loves company to the extreme. But God had me keep reading on to the next scene. God's talking to Moses, and God is saying at this point, I've had it. I've had it. Remember, he starts the parsha and he says, I am giving. And at this point, he says, nope, I'm done. Despite everything, all the signs and wonders I've done in the midst of these people, they continue to not believe. I'm going to wipe them out, he's telling Moses, and I'm going to start over with your line, with your progeny, and I'll have a new people of promise to take into the land. Now, Moses was kind of basically saying the same things to God a parsha ago. But, you know, God, something happened in Moses' spirit, and Moses, to his credit, starts interceding for the people and asking God not to do this. If not for the sake of the people, for the sake of the testimony of God's good name. And God listens. And he basically reduces the sentence from complete total annihilation on the spot to, okay, I'll let them live, but they're not going into the land. Not this generation. They're not going to obtain the promise. They're going to wander in the desert for 40 more years until they die out, and then their progeny can go in. They didn't get to obtain the promise. Take a moment and think about that. In a couple of chapters, we go from the land I'm giving, no land for you. It's sobering. It's sobering to me when I read it. I kept reading. And then came the verse that really humbled me and provoked me to jealousy. And it's verse 24, God's still talking to Moses. He said, no land for them, 40 more years in the wilderness for this generation. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring him into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. I couldn't get away from this because he has a different spirit. It's all I could keep thinking about. Because originally, I thought I was going to be giving a message kind of talking about the losers, the whiners, the complainers, and how we shouldn't be like that. And maybe I was feeling a little spiritually superior. I mean, come on. We complain and stuff, but we never get that bad, right? But I couldn't stop thinking about this, because he has a different spirit, and what that meant. What was so different about Caleb's spirit that enabled him to obtain the promise while everybody else didn't. More accurately, Caleb retained the promise that God had withdrawn from the rest of the generation, except for Joshua, who also had a spirit like Caleb we see in the parsha. Because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully. I found myself wanting to go back through the parasha and understand more about Caleb and his spirit. I found myself, the message that I thought I was giving, shifting. As I'm now, instead of comparing myself very favorably, mind you, to the complaining, fearful majority, instead wondering how I stacked up next to Caleb and his different spirit and following God fully. And I started getting a sense that maybe this was going to be a convicting devotional for me. God was giving, but only two obtained, is what we learned in the parsha. Joshua and Caleb, different spirits. So I thought, okay, maybe let's compare the good reports and the bad reports, and that will give a clue as to what was different about their spirits. Is it a matter of perspective? Is Caleb choosing to look on the good and the pure and the lovely, and the 10 spies who gave the bad report are focusing only on the negative? Is Caleb just a half glass full kind of guy? Is that the difference in the spirit? This is going to seem like a little bit of a tangent, but it's not. I recently took a workshop at work, and one of the things that stuck with me that the workshop leader said is, don't get sucked into answering wrong questions. I've never liked the glass half full, glass half empty question. I think it's a wrong question. If you look at this slide, you've got, let's call them 8-ounce glasses, right? An 8-ounce glass with 4 ounces of water in it. One person looks at it one way, they're called an optimist. Another person looks at it another way, they're called a pessimist. But somebody with a 4-ounce glass for 4 ounces of water, that's an innovator, that's a designer. I love that. I submit to you that it's a wrong question because the glass, the size of the glass, the size of the container is irrelevant. What's relevant is how much water you have and if it's enough to quench your thirst. Those are the right questions. What's that have to do with going back and looking at the reports and trying to discern the spirit? When I went back, starting to look at it from the lens of the spirit behind the reports, has nothing to do with perspective. Has nothing to do with a rosy outlook versus an unrosy outlook. Has to do with the fact that the 10 spies revealed through the report that they gave that when they went in to spy out the land, they were asking the wrong question. God said, it's the land which I am giving. The 10 spies, through the report that they gave, revealed that the question that they were asking when they went to spy it out was, can we take it? Not that God was giving it. Caleb had a different spirit because he never lost sight of the fact that God said he was giving it. He took it at face value. And so, Caleb, first time he speaks up, what he says to the people is, let's see if I'm following my outline here. Yes. He said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. He wasn't asking, he never asked the question, can we take it? God promised it. He had a confidence. We're able to overcome it. When I read that, it reminded me of a passage in Romans where it says, this is Romans 14, beginning in verse 31b through verse 37. If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him freely give us all things? There's God as giver again. Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? Yet in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Seeing God as a giver, even if there's challenges that require obtaining that gift, if you're certain that God is giving, then you can see yourself as a conqueror. Okay, so back to our story. When Caleb speaks again, this time with Joshua, who's the other faithful spy who's also allowed to obtain the promise, we find out. He reveals more about his different spirit. And I'm sorry, I didn't make a slide with this scripture, but the passage is Numbers 14, starting with verse 6. And it says, "But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes." This is in response to the people's mass hysteria and saying, again, that they want to go back to Egypt. "And they spoke to the children of Israel, saying, 'The land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land.'" Well, God already told them that. "If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." He's not telling them anything they don't already know. He's just reminding them of what they know and have seen about God and what God has told them about the promise. The difference in Caleb's spirit then, and again, when I read Romans, the passage in Romans where he says, we're more than conquerors, and how that lines up. As I was meditating devotionally on this parasha, you know, what came to me is Caleb's spirit was different because it aligns with God's spirit. That's it. It aligns with God's spirit. It agrees with God's spirit. And he believed. Because of that, he believed. So the difference in his spirit was simply belief. Is that it? Because he believed he got to go in and possess the land. Okay, I get that. But because the rest of the generation didn't believe, God was ready to totally annihilate them and not only take the promise away from them, but away from their progeny. Is belief, unbelief, really that big a deal? Well, belief is not unbenign. Because of their unbelief, they were ready to stone Joshua and Caleb when they were exhorted to why they should believe. That's how hardened their heart of unbelief was. That's how deep it went. Because of it, they wanted to go back to Egypt and undo all the deliverance that God had done and the resulting testimony to all the surrounding nations. And because of their unbelief, they rebelled at the doing of God's will by refusing to go in and enter the land as God had instructed them to. Unbelief is not benign. This is the part where I started getting convicted in my devotional study of the parasha. I wrestle with fear of the unknown, especially when I think the unknown, what lies ahead, may require me to be a person with skills I have not yet acquired and I'm not yet certain of. I wrestle with unbelief. And sometimes I'm able to fix that by changing my perspective. Sometimes by looking at the glass half full or being grateful of my 4 ounces of water, regardless of the size of the container. Or reminding myself of all the ways that God's been with me. It encourages my spirit, lifts me up, and I'm good, I'm better. Fear's gone. But sometimes, when my spirit is not right within me, those things don't take hold. And it was in reading this parasha when I saw that the people so couldn't receive an encouraging word that they were ready to stone the people who brought it, that I recognize that, yeah, I've wrestled with that spirit. There have been times when I've read a promise in the scripture or had a fellow believer encourage me, and wrath rises up in me. And that's a point in my devotional study that I recognize that same spirit, we're talking about Caleb had a different spirit, we're talking about differences in spirit. Realize that same spirit that caused the people to want to stone Caleb and Joshua can get a hold of me. As a believer? Really? Yep. Yes. It was encouraging to me that I'm not in this boat alone. In the book of Hebrews, the writer actually gives a drash on this very parsha. And he says, "Beware, brethren, fellow believers, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, lest any of you be hardened through deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end." So we see, it says a little later on in verse 19, so we see, says the writer of Hebrews, that they could not enter, he's talking about these people, this generation, because of unbelief. He goes on to say, "Without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." That's the good news. Yeah, that evil heart of unbelief, and look at the way it's described. Again, it's not benign. It's described as evil. It's described as departing from the living God. It's not benign. But God is the giver of faith, which enables us to come to him, believing that he is, and that he will reward us if we diligently seek him. And that's the good news. That's the encouraging news. So in the sameness of the desert, in the fear of what lies ahead that may ask of us more than we think we might have it in us to give, or maybe we're just tired of being asked to rise to the occasion again. Maybe unbelief manifests in complaining instead of praising. Maybe it manifests in refusing to do the next thing that God is asking us to do. I can tell you, it comes from looking at ourselves and our own inadequacies rather than looking at God and his power in us. So, but the people didn't believe, despite all evidence to the contrary that God was trustworthy. They'd seen what he'd done. They saw that he was in their midst every day. They didn't want to believe it because they didn't want to go up, whatever their reasons. Because of that, I think their shortness of spirit is because they didn't see God as a giver. Remember, God starts out in the parsha, "I am giving." They saw God as a withholder. They saw God as a withholder. And so they were not in a position to receive what God had to give. They saw God as a withholder. What, Lance, speak louder. Speak louder, Lance is telling me. Okay. They saw God as a withholder, and so God withheld and said, "Never mind, 40 more years in the wilderness for you. Your children will inherit." But Caleb had a different spirit. He got to obtain the promise. He got to go in to the land which God was giving, a land of milk and honey, and yes, challenges too. It was last night I told you that as I was reviewing this again, I said, "Okay, God, that's a really great lesson. Now, how do we apply it? What do we do next?" And it's the hope, it's the encouragement that we're not stuck. If we have a spirit that's a wrong spirit, that's asking, listening to wrong answers to wrong questions, rather than listening to what God is saying, there's hope. There's prayer. And this is the one that I love, and it's the one that Billy and Wendy sang. "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." Sometimes what we need is to change our perspective. Sometimes what we need is to just encourage our hearts by remembering what God has done. And sometimes We need God to fix our spirits because it goes deeper. And the good news is He does. He does. He does. Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Shalom, and thanks for listening. Before we sign off, may we ask you to consider these thoughts also? For 20 years, Bethel has been serving in Manhattan, one of the most financially challenging places in the entire world. If you enjoy and feel nourished by these podcasts, we invite you to partner with us by making a generous one-time or repeating gift through our website, www.bethelnyc.org. It is so very easy to do, and every gift means so much towards reaching and teaching the Jewish population of Manhattan about Yeshua, our Messiah, as well as providing faith community life for those who come to believe. Thank you for whatever you can do, and we hope our podcasts continue to be helpful to you. Shalom.